I'm Lester Holt. Tonight on Dateline, fame, fortune, and a fatal mystery. Who killed the basketball star?
He was larger than life. He's making tens of millions of dollars. I mean, this is Lorenzen Wright. It was as if an explosion went off.
Hello?
Someone is running for their life and there's multiple gunshots.
It made the hair on the back of your neck stand up. He didn't deserve to die this way.
Who would do this to him?
You look at everybody, every friend, every family member.
The divorced spouse, she was the last person known to have seen him.
We had to dig into that.
There are these mysterious gunmen showing up looking for Lorenzen.
Who were these people that came by the house?
All of a sudden, they found a gun.
They're on to somebody.
He was under everybody's noses the whole time.
Yeah. How's that for a kicker? Just ultimate evil.
Here's Andrea Canning with Death of a Hometown Hero.
It was just after midnight in Memphis. As Sunday turned into Monday. On Beale Street, the blues clubs were blaring. Barbecue joints still sizzling. Even the lights of nearby Graceland were aglow. But just outside of town, in this tree-lined field, it was quiet, peaceful, not a soul in sight. Then suddenly, an unmistakable sound echoed through the trees. Seconds later, it was over. The crime, conceived weeks earlier, was now complete and perfectly executed. It all began in July 2010 when one of the city's favorite sons returned to town. Lorenzen Wright, or simply Ren, played high school and college basketball here in Memphis, then later starred for the hometown NBA Grizzlies. Just 34 years old, Ren was larger than life, according to close friend Bill Adkins.
How popular was he here in Memphis?
Oh, extremely, extremely. Everybody loved Lorenzen, and he was just popular. I mean, you had to notice him. I mean, 6'11", 6'10", you know, he walks in the door, everybody knows it's him.
Charismatic, yet humble, Ren was as generous as he was outgoing.
He was kind to everyone. I never saw a time when he would shun people away or say cruel or rude things to people. The guy would give you the shirt off his back.
Movie star looks?
Oh, yeah, charming. Quite charming. Handsome guy.
Lorenzen was at the end of a solid NBA career, now divorced and living in Atlanta. But he would often come back to Memphis to visit. So on a Sunday in late July, Ren arrived and spent part of the day with close buddy Phil Dotson and some other old friends.
The perfect Sunday afternoon of just, you know, the guys hanging, bonding.
A few hours later, Phil took Ren to pick up his oldest son at a local gym, and then dropped them off at the home of Shara Wright, Lorenzen's ex-wife, where Ren sometimes visited when he was in town.
He said, I'll call you later. And so that being about 10 p.m., I left. I got home and I never heard from him.
Sunday night passed, but no call from Ren.
And so I shot him a text and he didn't reply.
So I'm sure you tried to reach him the next day.
The next day.
And
nothing.
Was that odd, or still thinking he's just busy with the family?
Well, I just thought he was still busy with the family. It wasn't a big deal.
Ren was known to go off the grid occasionally. Plus, he had a scheduled trip to Las Vegas later that week. Maybe he just left early.
When you're in Vegas in the casino, you don't get a signal. I thought it was kind of weird that he didn't text me back, but I didn't think anything about it.
But by day three, Ren's mother, Deborah Marion, was worried. She'd been trying to reach him all week.
He never not answer my call. He never not called me back.
Did you just think maybe he's in Vegas having a
nope.
really good time?
Not in my time. It ain't called me.
Deborah filed a missing persons report with police, while Phil sounded his own personal alarm.
I'm sending him our SOS code that we had for each other when we really needed one another. And I didn't hear anything from him.
Was this where things turned for you when he didn't respond to that?
Yes, I started getting worried. I was like, man, where is he?
He just basically has like
vanished from the face of the earth. Yes. Yes. It was starting to get scary.
At 6'11" and 255 pounds, Lorenzen Wright is hard to miss, but he has been missing for a week.
Police are searching for former Memphis basketball
player. By now, the local media was all over the story.
He hasn't surfaced anywhere.
The disappearance of Lorenzen Wright.
Investigators say there is nothing to suggest that Wright is not alive. However, as time passes, the situation grows more worrisome.
It was shocking. It was just, what do you mean Lorenzen Wright is missing?
Kanji Anthony covered the story for NBC affiliate WMC-TV in Memphis.
The whole town was abuzz. Everybody wanted to know, where's Lorenzen?
Lorenzen's former wife, Shara, told reporters he was fine the last night she saw him.
I'm not going to believe anything other than that he's fine now. I just need somebody to call if they've seen him or heard anything from him.
But Ren's mother, Deborah, was already expecting the worst.
I told the police when I first reported him missing, y'all, my son is not going to be good when y'all find him.
Your intuition was telling you.
I wasn't feeling him nowhere. He wasn't nowhere.
And you must normally feel kind of a spiritual connection to your son?
Yes.
Or
I told the police, I don't know how to explain it to y'all, but he's dead.
When we come back, a terrifying call to 911 becomes a tantalizing clue.
Hello?
It made the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Someone is running for their life and there's multiple gunshots.
I had never heard a 911 call like that one before.
It felt like someone had pulled my heart out of my chest.
Tonight, police are searching for former Memphis basketball player Lorenzen Wright.
7 long days and still no sign of Lorenzen Wright. One of the last to see him alive was his ex-wife, Shara.
There are no new leads or anything. It's mind-boggling. We're hopeful. Today is one of the worst days for me because it's an entire week.
With each passing day, Ren's mother, Deborah, feared the worst.
You must be frantic.
Yes. I done called everybody everywhere that he would be associated with. Nobody know nothing.
But police did find one clue buried in Ren's phone records. The last call he made was to 911. Remember those gunshots that began our story? They were actually fired during that chilling 911 call.
Germantown 911, where is your emergency?
Germantown is a suburb of Memphis. Police there never investigated the call. It wasn't until 8 days after Ren went missing that Memphis police and Deputy Director Tony Armstrong finally learned about it.
Hello?
And came to realize that the frantic caller screaming in a hail of gunfire was Lorenzen Wright.
It made the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
That's no joke when someone is running for their life and there's multiple gunshots being fired.
I had never heard a 911 call like that one before.
Live pictures here from Chopper 5. Police are not saying anything official at this point.
Police were able to trace the 911 call from nearby cell phone towers and soon swarmed a field on the outskirts of town looking for Lorenzen.
The information led a Shelby County Sheriff's search crew to a wooded area near Hacks Cross and Winchester Road.
And it didn't take long. A search team suddenly noticed something very disturbing.
Breaking news. Memphis police are in southeast Memphis where a body has been found.
And the word went around town like wildfire. Anyone who knew Lorenzen literally hopped into their car and drove to that scene.
News of the discovery spread quickly, and crowds of Wright's friends on and off the court steadily grew.
Lorenzen's mother, Deborah, soon arrived at the scene. Then crossed the police line to where the body was being recovered.
I wanted to walk in his last walk so I could get that feeling like what happened. Just let me walk the last path he walked.
Why did you want to do that?
Because I wanted to feel what he left for me. Because I knew.
Of course she knew. It was her firstborn son, Lorenzen.
Police have notified immediate family that Lorenzen Wright was found dead here. We have not.
By now, a large crowd was holding an impromptu memorial at the grim site. Among them was Wren's friend and NBA star, Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, it's just a great loss for the city of Memphis, for his family. Such an early age. I mean, it's just senseless.
Then, Lorenzen's body, which had been left in the searing Memphis sun for 10 long days, was taken in for an autopsy.
I've seen decomposed bodies before, but I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for Lorenzen's remains. I would not have known that that was him.
Lorenzen Wright was just 34, the father of six young children. Now police confirmed the horrible news with the rest of his family and close friends.
I literally remember freezing. I dropped the phone and my mind went blank. I'm like, what do you mean he's dead? And then he told me he's been in the field for some days, and it was bad. It was bad. And I hung the phone up and I cried. Felt like someone had pulled my heart out of my chest and just stomped on it.
So it was your best friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Word also spread south to Atlanta, where Wren's old friend and roommate, Mike Gibson, was anxiously awaiting any news.
When I found out about it, I would just dropped to my knees. I couldn't walk. I was like paralyzed. I'm like, this can't be true.
At first, nobody knew what exactly had happened to Wren. But later, the autopsy report was released and revealed a disturbing answer. He had been shot multiple times with wounds to the chest and even his face.
It was an assassination. He was murdered.
The number of times that he was shot, and then to know that those shots were to his face.
That's personal.
That's personal. That's a deep-rooted hate.
So hateful and so personal, which suggested the killer might have actually known Lorenzen.
I just could not imagine anybody wanting to harm him.
Did you think he was targeted?
No, I thought maybe somebody wanted to rob him. But who would do this to him?
And why? A few tiny clues left at the crime scene would soon provide a huge lead. Because it appeared not only did someone want Lorenzen dead, maybe there was more than one person involved in his murder.
Coming up, Shara and Lorenzen's lifestyle, fast and furious.
Oh my God, trips, houses, cars.
Watches, rings, earrings.
Was his $55 million fortune a motive for murder? When Dateline continues.
Memphis was in mourning. It was a sad day in the summer of 2010 when the city paid its last respects to Lorenzen Wright. The funeral so big, it was televised by several local stations.
His funeral, oh boy. Well, it was pretty much the who's who of Memphis.
Lorenzen's mother, Deborah Marion, was there too, of course, never imagining she'd have to bury her oldest child.
I just didn't want to live.
You and Lorenzen were so close.
I promise you, life wasn't worth living after they killed my firstborn. It just...
You two had been through so much together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And see, I was young when I had him, so we kind of like grew up together.
Wren's ex-wife, Shara, and their children all came to say farewell, too. Six young children now suddenly left without a father.
The loss of such a great person in the fabric of Memphis society was just so tragic and painful.
To help the city heal, the Memphis mayor made a promise.
Justice
will be done. That's our pledge.
Justice, of course, depended on a thorough police investigation. Detectives were now playing catch-up, given how long it had taken to find Wren's body after he was murdered. But at the crime scene, clues were already emerging.
Police found different types of shell casings at the scene.
Different casings, which meant more than one gun was used to murder Wren.
Which indicated there could have possibly been two suspects responsible for the shooting.
Memphis PD Deputy Director Tony Armstrong was already feeling the heat to crack one of the biggest cases of his career.
This case was personal to you.
It was. The mayor of the city at that time had vowed to the public that we were going to solve it. I wanted to be able to tell his mom that we got the person that's responsible for this.
But who would do such a thing, and why? Wren came from humble beginnings in Mississippi, where he was born and first started playing basketball. But it was here in Memphis where he became a star during his high school days. That's when he met his future wife, Shara, whose father was his coach at the time. Memphis newspaper reporter Mark Paraskia.
A lot of people didn't know about him until he played AAU ball for Shara Wright's dad. And Shara's dad brought him up to Memphis, and he played his last season of high school ball here in Memphis and was a high school All-American.
The coaches were like, I don't know what this boy doing, but he can make some money one day.
Shara also liked what she saw, and soon the two began dating. Even though she was almost 5 years older, as Wren's friend Bill Adkins immediately noticed.
She was different. You could tell she was quite mature, quite savvy. Sexy, can I use that word? Sexy?
Absolutely.
She was the kind of girl that guys looked at.
Lorenzen, the country kid, was soon smitten with the more sophisticated city gal.
What was it about Shara that he fell so fast for her?
Well, let me see, how can I put this nicely?
Sex.
Uh-huh. He was 17, she was 22.
So she lured him in.
He had a little girlfriend, but they wasn't doing all that stuff Shara was doing. Mm-mm. She was a lady and he was a kid.
Deborah never really liked Shara, but there wasn't much she could do, as the romance with Wren flourished. And so did his basketball career. He soon became a star at the University of Memphis. Then, in 1996, after his sophomore season, Lorenzen hit the NBA jackpot when he was drafted in the first round by the Los Angeles Clippers. At the tender age of 20, Wren was an instant millionaire. By now, Shara had given birth to their first baby, Lorenzen Jr. The three settled in L.A. and immediately began living the Southern California high life. After his second season, Wren and Shara got married.
I was one of the groomsmen, and it was an awesome affair. The wedding was beautiful. It looked like a fairy tale.
Phil even lived with Lorenzen and Shara for over a year when Wren played with the Clippers.
And Shara didn't mind you being the house guest?
No, she didn't. They were always known for having, you know, huge hearts.
Wren played three seasons with the Clippers, then moved on to Atlanta and signed another multi-million dollar contract before being traded to his hometown team, the Memphis Grizzlies, in 2001. Back home, Wren re-immersed himself in the community. He opened a restaurant while committing to local charities and children.
He would do a summer camp here. It was always huge. Thousands of kids would attend. Giving back to his community was one of the things that really made him happy.
Over his career, Lorenzen earned some $55 million, which he lavished on his friends and growing family.
Oh my God, trips, buying anything he wants, houses, cars. He took care of his friends, took care of his family. Anybody who put a hand out, he virtually gave to him. He never could say no to people.
They actually built a home beyond the suburbs. It was a huge 13,000 square foot home, cost several million dollars.
And inside their giant garage.
We had a couple of Ferraris and he loved cars.
He had bought two Bentleys in 1 month.
And Shara?
She loved jewelry.
Are we talking diamonds and?
Watches, rings, earrings. Bracelets. She loved to decorate her home. custom drapes and custom upholstery on couches. And then, you know, a couple months go by and then she'd change everything up again.
It was an embarrassment of riches. But behind the gates of their Memphis mansion, there was trouble in paradise.
Coming up.
He was a rock star. And with being a rock star comes certain temptations.
Adulterous affairs, his and hers.
Lorenzo went to the house where supposedly she was there with another guy.
He went ballistic.
December 25th, 2007. Everybody's about to come downstairs. I hear him making noise.
3 years before Lorenzen Wright's death, his family can be seen in this rare home video celebrating what would be one of their last Christmases altogether. The house was decorated, and there were plenty of presents under the tree. Ren was playing Santa for the kids.
Now we got one of these.
And in the garage, Shara had a surprise waiting for him.
You love it, Daddy?
I love it. Cool.
It was right out of a Christmas movie. But behind the scenes, Memphis investigative reporter Mark Paraskia says Ren and Shara's life wasn't always so picture perfect.
Merry Christmas.
People who knew them well, beyond the public arena, knew they had troubles.
A volatile mix of infidelity and jealousy, says Paraskia.
It was this darker side.
For Lorenzen, life in the NBA was intoxicating. Under the bright lights, in the biggest cities with plenty of cash, clubbing, and women.
He was a rock star, and with being a rock star comes certain temptations that come at you.
And those temptations, unfortunately, did win over at times.
Yes, and you know, the temptations are real.
By Shara's account, from the time that he got in the NBA, it was like a constant parade of women. He was young, he was a good-looking guy. I mean, and you know, he had all this opportunity. I think he took advantage of it.
Shara, according to Lorenzen's mother, Deborah, was cheating too, and not very discreetly.
Shara was being seen, not heard, seen, doing things she shouldn't be doing.
Infidelity?
Mm-hmm. If you're going to do that, go to the next town over.
She was flaunting other men in her hometown.
Yes. She wanted to do what her single friends did.
So she wanted to act like a single woman even though she was married.
Mm-hmm. 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 If she didn't want to, she did.
Ren was upset about Shara's alleged affairs, according to close friend Bill Adkins.
He was very concerned about what he perceived as her infidelity and things. I can't leave home, trust her. I'm hearing stories and rumors about all these guys. He, at the same time, he knew he wasn't totally a saint as well in that area. He was looking for solutions to solving some of the marital issues that he was having at the time.
He wanted to make it work.
He absolutely wanted to make it work, yeah.
In 2003, amidst all the turbulence, an unexpected tragedy rocked their world. It involved the couple's 11-month-old daughter, Sierra.
Wright's wife found the baby not breathing in her crib Saturday. She rushed her to a nearby medical center where she was pronounced dead.
Doctor's report said that she died from SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. That was the hardest thing I know that he ever went through in his life.
She's in heaven with God, and I know that. So now I'm just going to work hard on trying to get myself there.
Did it cause a strain in his marriage?
I think it did. He was on the road when it happened, and not being able to get there and protect his daughter, and I think he always regretted that.
Ren's friend said that 2 years later, the couple's problems escalated to a whole new and now dangerous level.
There was a situation that happened, and Lorenzo went to the house where supposedly she was there with another guy. He knew the gentleman.
He went ballistic. I think he had a gun.
The story made the local newspapers, which reported that Ren threatened the man and also attacked Shara.
She had some marks on her face. He hit her, and the police were going to arrest him, but she would not testify against him. Lorenzen had a public image to uphold. She didn't want to expose that part of him.
At the time, police said they didn't have enough evidence to file an offense report. In a newspaper account, Wren denied harming his wife or having a gun. But one of the people who said she was there told us she feared for Shara's life. With the help of counseling, their tumultuous marriage somehow stayed intact. And in 2007, they even renewed their vows.
Everybody thought that, okay, now they're good again. And, you know, sure enough, a few months passed by and, you know, the same thing's happening again.
Back to the fighting.
And often it was about money, says close friend Phil Dotson, especially when it came to Shara's spending.
There were times when she would spend money and not tell him that she would spend money. Maybe get back at him for indiscretions.
There would be large sums of money that would he would think is in the checking account, and it's not there. And it'd be because of her spending.
This was causing stress in the marriage?
Absolutely.
By 2009, Lorenzen's NBA career was winding down, and so were those multi-million dollar paychecks, which didn't help his rocky relationship with Shara.
You could see very quickly that the marriage was headed to a demise.
Lorenzen and Shara split up that year and went their separate ways, says Wren's close friend, Mike Gibson.
He said, she doing her thing, I'm doing my thing. Hell, she's fleeing with the lawn man.
The lawn man? You may want to remember him. Shara filed for divorce, and their marriage was officially over in 2010. Wren's mom says he was relieved.
He just couldn't take it no more. She started making him sick just to her face.
But was it somewhat also liberating for Lorenzen to finally
be free
out of the marriage?
Free. That's all he wanted, to be free and have his kids.
As part of their divorce settlement, Lorenzen took out $1 million life insurance policy that would be paid to the 6 children upon his death. It would be administered by Shara, since she was awarded custody. Wren was also ordered to pay alimony and child support, totaling $26,000 a month.
Lorenzen, even though he made $55 million playing basketball, he was broke. He had 2 very expensive homes that were foreclosed on. They were bouncing checks left and right. I mean, they'd burned through all this money. He seemed to be in need of money.
Big money, but from where? Shara claimed to have a lead about how Wren was trying to raise some quick cash. And it would soon take his murder investigation in a whole new direction.
Coming up.
There are these mysterious gunmen looking for Lorenzen.
Shara points police to a dark world of crime.
You had to take the drug theory seriously.
Absolutely. Do famous people get killed in the drug world? Absolutely. Do athletes get killed in the drug world? Absolutely.
When Dateline continues.
When police catch a homicide case, the victim is usually a stranger. But many at the Memphis PD knew Lorenzen Wright, including Deputy Director Tony Armstrong.
This is a guy that I used to talk to. You know, I used to eat in his restaurant. Occasionally, he'd come sit down with me. We have conversations when he was in town. It was chilling.
Chilling to think how this hometown hero was so brutally murdered, seemingly for no reason. So Armstrong and his team of detectives started their investigation by looking at the victim himself.
Let's retrace Lorenzen's steps. Who was the last person to see him alive? Who knows him better than anybody else? Let's talk to his wife.
There are no new leads or anything. It's mind-boggling.
That would be Shara Wright, Wren's ex-wife. She was interviewed by investigators when he first went missing.
I just need somebody to call if they've seen him or anything from him.
Shara told police something strange happened in the weeks before Wren's murder.
There are these mysterious gunmen showing up, you know, with, you know, guns tucked in their waistbands, who are knocking on doors, knocking on her door, looking for Lorenzen.
Shara said she wasn't sure who they were or what they wanted. She also told police about the last time she saw Wren on the night he disappeared.
She gives a statement that basically saying Lorenzen left in the middle of the night.
He had been at her house?
He had been at her house. He had gotten there from Atlanta, and sometime during the night, he leaves.
Shara's timeline of Lorenzen's last night had him arriving at her home around 8 p.m. She said Wren later left the house around 10:30, but soon returned. Then, sometime before 3 a.m., said Shara, he left again with an unknown person. But that wasn't all.
She told police that the night he was killed, he left with a box of drugs. He said he was going to flip something.
She hears him talking on the phone about flipping or turning over a large sum of money, but she doesn't say who he's talking to.
So detectives dug deeper into Lorenzen's life. They discovered he was nearly broke and had a connection of sorts to a shady character named Craig Pettis.
He's probably one of the largest drug dealers that we've ever seen.
In 2009, Lorenzen's name surfaced in a federal drug investigation involving a lieutenant of Pettis named Bobby Cole. Cole turned over two luxury cars to police. When they ran the VIN numbers, it turned out the vehicles were registered in Wren's name.
Lorenzen never transferred ownership into Bobby Cole's name, which is a classic drug scheme where drug dealers come into money illicitly and they've got to launder it.
Deborah Marion insists it wasn't her son who sold the cars, but a guy who worked for him. In fact, Wren was never charged with anything. But now that he was dead, the city buzzed with rumors that Wren may have been the victim of a drug hit. Especially given the way he was found in that field, executed.
You had to take the drug theory seriously. It was something that everybody was talking about.
Absolutely. In my experience as a law enforcement officer, do famous people get killed in the drug world? Absolutely. Do athletes get killed in the drug world? Absolutely. So we had to make sure that we looked at all of that.
With his NBA career done, the big paychecks had dried up. Plus, those huge alimony and child support payments were due. Police wondered if Wren was desperate for money. Could he have been dealing drugs to make some quick cash? So detectives started interviewing a whole new cast of characters to answer that very question.
We talked to informants that we had on the streets. Every drug dealer, every informant that we talked to basically said that that just wasn't the case.
Wren's family and friends were outraged at Shara for even suggesting he might be dealing.
When she came out and said that he left with a box of drugs and some people came to the house, well, you take all his credibility away. None of it made sense.
Was Lorenzen knowingly involved in any criminal activity?
Not that I know of at all. I never saw anything that would be out of the ordinary.
So the drug theory, which seemed to sidetrack the investigation, was now dead. Wren's mother, Deborah, had never believed it anyway. She was certain the key to solving her son's murder was much closer to home.
I told the police, y'all need to go talk to his ex-wife.
Deborah had never been Shara's biggest fan. She was convinced her former daughter-in-law knew a lot more about what really happened to Wren.
What did the police think about you?
That I was a crazy lady. But I told them, I'm going to keep on doing this while the blood running warm in my body.
You would have needed a sign from God
right.
To back off
exactly.
Shara, right?
Exactly.
Detectives did notice one thing. While Deborah was relentless, Shara was reclusive. Police didn't hear a peep from her.
The level of grief from both of those women, they were polar opposites of each other.
Now, in fairness, one's the mom, one's divorced.
But you still have six kids by this man, he's been murdered.
Shara isn't acting upset enough? Because that doesn't make somebody a killer.
It doesn't make you a killer. It makes you a high-level person of interest, though.
Shara hardly seemed like a killer. She was dating a sheriff's deputy, was deeply religious, and spent a lot of time at church where she was on track to become an ordained minister. She was also extremely devoted to her six kids.
How was Shara as a mother?
She loved her kids. I saw love. I saw nurturing. There's no way she could have anything to do with taking their father away.
In fact, police couldn't find any evidence linking Shara to the murder. As months ticked by with no new leads, the case began to go cold.
It has been 365 days.
On the first anniversary of Wren's death, Deborah held a vigil.
Family, friends, and fans of Lorenzen Wright gathered in front of the FedEx Forum.
I'm not giving up. I'm not tired yet. Somebody gonna tell on a friend. That's how this gonna end.
But the end didn't come. The case gathered dust. More months passed, then years. Shara laid low and moved on with her life. Until somebody decided to follow the money.
Coming up,
She collected the $1 million and had spent somewhere like $930,000.
The entire insurance fund is almost all gone.
All that money, where was it?
It's difficult for the kids, and it's been difficult for me.
A blockbuster new battle is about to begin.
This one is my daughter right here. My dogs, I breed Rottweilers.
To his fans, Lorenzen Wright seemed like a gentle giant, the last person anyone would want to kill. But someone most certainly did. Problem was, police couldn't figure out who. By now, 4 long years had passed since his murder, and the case that once consumed the city of Memphis was now ice cold, according to WMC-TV anchor Kanji Anthony.
Nothing. Crickets! Crickets! It was just crickets for years. And every now and then, somebody would just say, gosh, do you think they'll ever figure out who killed Lorenzen Wright?
By now, Tony Armstrong was chief of the Memphis PD. His detectives had cleared almost every possible suspect. But one in particular remained in the forefront, Lorenzen Wright's ex-wife, Shara.
She's always been a person of interest. And no matter who we talk to, no matter what door we knocked on, no matter what Crime Stoppers tip we got, it always led right back to Shara.
Was anyone coming to her defense and saying she loved Lorenzen, she would never do this?
I've investigated people that have committed multiple murders and had people to come to their defense. I never, to this day, have gotten a call from anybody that has defended Shara, ever.
Maybe that's why Shara had lawyered up and stopped talking to the police. Out of the public eye, she sometimes surfaced at the Mount Olive Baptist Church, where she was now an ordained minister, and ran a nonprofit called Born to Prosper Ministries, which helped local kids. As for supporting her own children, Shara's primary source of income still came from Wren.
She is getting his insurance money and the pension from the Grizzlies and all the other NBA teams. So the money is going to Shara because she is the custodian of her own children with Lorenzen.
Wren had earned tens of millions in the NBA, but his life insurance policy was worth far less.
She collected the $1 million and had spent somewhere like $930,000 of it.
When Lorenzen's father, Herb Wright, discovered that she had spent much of the money earmarked for his 6 grandchildren, he sued Shara.
Herb Wright versus Shara Wright. She received more than $1 million between August 1st, 2011.
So we end up going to court. The entire insurance fund is almost all gone, and his father wanted to put a stop to that.
Herb Wright is asking the court for Shara Wright to be removed as trustee of $1 million life insurance proceeds trust.
The Lorenzen Wright case was back in the spotlight as Shara was now in court and on camera.
My whole life has been in a hole, pretty much, going through quite a bit. It's difficult for the kids, and it's been difficult for me, but I believe that we deserve to be happy.
The court proceedings were contentious and exposed all the specifics of Shara's spending.
More than $55,000 for furniture. More than $180,000 spent on expenses at 4 different properties. Construction.
And the judge decided to get a receiver to take over the funds and to investigate what was going on with the money.
Which meant what was left of Lorenzen's insurance money was now out of Shara's control. But losing in court didn't stop Shara from launching a new career as an author. She wrote and self-published a book called Mr. Tell Me Anything. You can probably guess who the title character was supposed to be.
I think a lot of it may have been true, but I think a lot of it still made up. I think a lot of it was still her perspective, and she wanted to make him seem like a really bad guy.
The book seemed to be a fictionalized account of Shara's tumultuous life with Lorenzen. It was hardly a bestseller, but Kanji Anthony found it quite the read.
The similarities between Shara and Lorenzen and the two main characters in the book are uncanny. And as you're going through the book, you're hearing claims of infidelity to domestic violence.
So I asked her, I said, did this really happen? She goes, oh yeah, absolutely this happened. 99.9% of that book is our real life. I just changed some names around.
The book ends with the Shara and Lorenzen characters settling in for a night of romance. But in real life, Ren's close friends were beginning to share the same suspicion his mom and police already had. That on the last night of his life, Shara wasn't Ren's lover. She just might have been involved in his murder.
I felt very confident that she played some kind of role in it. But to what degree, I did not know.
So maybe even indirectly.
Indirectly, she got him killed. Directly, yeah. Before the fact, after the fact, she had something to do with it.
Maybe, but no one was able to prove it. As the fifth anniversary of Ren's murder approached, Shara would soon embark on a whole new chapter of her life. With a new man, in a new city. But could she shake her past and finally clear her name?
Coming up.
There was chemistry there from the beginning.
A new romance brings new revelations.
We talk about the night he disappeared. She was like, you know, had he not passed, I'd be still with him. And I was thinking to myself, there's no way she killed him.
When Dateline continues.
They met at a coffee shop in Memphis just after New Year's 2015. He was a journalist in search of a story. She was the ex-wife of Lorenzen Wright and seemed eager to chat.
We actually sat there and talked for another 6 hours.
Kelvin Cowens wanted to get inside the mind of Shara Wright. It had been almost 5 years since Lorenzen's murder, and she was still under suspicion.
She couldn't believe how people were so upset with her. And I asked her, you have anything to do with it? She said, no, absolutely not. I'm waiting on the day that they find the person or the people that killed him.
At the end of that marathon interview, Kelvin had his story and something else.
We knew that there was chemistry there from the beginning. That's how it started. We almost fell in love immediately.
Shara had been keeping a low profile ever since her legal battle over Lorenzen's estate. But soon, she and Kelvin were out and about as their romance took off. Then, a few months after they met, Kelvin wanted to move to Houston, where he often did business. So Shara and her kids decided to go with him.
She told me that she was moving to Houston, she had enough of Memphis, and she was going to go down there and join the staff of this very famous pastor down there.
God created you to rise higher.
Joel Osteen, the world-famous minister whose services are on TV and YouTube.
She just had, you know, all these big plans, you know. It wasn't just that she was going to go pastor a church. She was going to be a pastor of a mega church, you know. She thinks in terms of big. Everything's big and grandiose.
They settled in the suburb of Sugarland, and life was sweet, at least in the beginning. Kelvin got a nice house on a lake in a nice neighborhood with good schools for the kids and a church nearby. Shara never did preach with Joel Osteen, but she did pray. A lot.
Shara would sometimes go and get in our master closet with a pillow and cover and pray for hours. You can hear her, she's calling out her family and friends. And sometimes I had to get up 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning, and I go in the closet and I have to get her up and say, hey, come on, get back in the bed.
Even so, Kelvin was convinced he'd met the woman of his dreams. Her family felt like his. They shared everything, even their deepest secrets. Nothing was off limits, including Lorenzen's murder.
We talk about the night he disappeared. What could have happened? The answer was always, I have no idea. I felt like Shara still had feelings for Lorenzen. She was like, you know, had he not passed, I'd be still with him. And I was thinking to myself, there's no way she killed him. There's no way she had anything to do with it. You know, who writes a book about someone they helped kill?
In fact, Shara promoted her book on a segment for Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports One in 2015. The key question wasn't about the book, but rather, did you have any part in Lorenzen's murder?
I met first I'm a wife, then I'm a mother, and then thirdly, I'm an author. The law enforcement should do what's best to find out who's the killer.
Back in Memphis, Lorenzen's best friend, Phil Dotson, saw the show.
And I could just think, oh, come on, Cheryl, what type of answer is that? You know, did you do it?
Did you find that odd, what
she
said?
I did. I found several things odd.
But you still didn't think
it was her. I couldn't. I couldn't. Early on in the marriage, like, there was love. To go from that to you murdered him, I couldn't buy it. I didn't buy it.
Neither Cheryl's TV interview nor her salacious book provided police with any evidence connecting her to the crime.
It's almost as if she's poking fun or she's taunting law enforcement with this book for somebody that's supposedly to be grieving. To write a book like that was just really bizarre.
But no real clues in it.
I don't think anything in there was of value as it relates to being a clue.
Shara even considered writing a sequel, but instead focused more on her family and continued her free spending ways, said Kelvin.
She had very expensive taste. I told her this, Shara, your appetite for nice things is not healthy. And she's like, that's the way God made me. And so I'm like, we're not gonna make it with the way you think. Your financial literacy is just off.
According to Kelvin, Cheryl was also spending a lot of time on the phone, apparently having secret conversations with someone he didn't know.
I felt like that Cheryl may have been cheating on me. I speculated a hidden lover.
Cheryl denied she was seeing someone, but gradually their once hot romance cooled. They grew apart, and after 2 years together, Kelvin says he decided it was over.
The day after her birthday, that was when we called it quits. She was very upset. She didn't want me to go.
Kelvin moved back to Memphis. Shara went west to California, where she and the kids moved in with her brother. She and Kelvin kept in touch, but soon there would be yet another man in her life. This one was also having secret conversations, but with detectives, about the last night of Lorenzen's life.
Coming up, a bombshell from inside prison walls.
She told me that she'd been having threats from Lorenzen. He had hired somebody to kill her.
The secret recordings that might break this case wide open.
It's called the Inland Empire. Riverside County, a sprawling stretch of Southern California suburbia east of LA. It was here in the little town of Murrieta where Shara Wright and her kids settled in the spring of 2017.
You got the feeling that she was starting a new life outside of the shadow of Lorenzen Wright's murder in Memphis, all the way across the country.
1,700 miles and 7 years removed from Wren's murder in Memphis. To some, Shara seemed more oblivious than ever as to what was happening back home. Even on the anniversary of his death.
7 years ago to the day, these family members reported Lorenzen Wright missing.
Once again, Lorenzen's family and friends gathered to pay their respects. Another year, another vigil to keep hope alive that his murder might somehow be solved.
We're going to keep this thing going year after year because I know that's what he would want us to do.
We love you, Lorenzen!
It's getting colder by the day, and we're no closer to finding out who did it. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him and what happened to him. I always kept the detective's phone numbers just in case. They always said, let us know if you come up with anything.
By now, many in Memphis were losing patience with those detectives. 7 long years, still no arrest, no justice. Lorenzen's mom, Deborah Marion, had been hounding the police the whole time. Calling, showing up at the station. Her sole mission in life was solving her son's murder.
Did you feel like there's never going to be an arrest in this case?
Nope, because I got to stay alive. Because before I die, they were going to find somebody. They're going to get her.
Specifically, Shara.
Her, right. And I told them it over and over and over again.
Tony Armstrong took some of her calls.
She was just relentless. She just would not let it go.
Don't mess with Mama.
Well, don't mess with Mama's babies.
He tried to assure Deborah that the case was still active, that Shara really was on their radar.
It's one thing to have a gut feeling that I know this person is responsible for this, but you have to be able to convince a jury.
You just didn't have enough evidence.
There was no evidence to tie anybody to it.
But unbeknownst to anyone in Wren's circle of family and friends, there was a potential witness. A man with a shady past and an explosive allegation, which police had kept secret for 5 years. An informant who actually knew Shara and had a strong motivation to talk.
What happened was Jimmy Martin, who was Shara's cousin, killed a love interest that he had. He was convicted, and it's that time, 2012, when he's going to prison that he tells wanting to flip to do a deal.
Jimmy said he knew what happened to Wren, and he offered to tell his story to detectives. So in 2012, 2 years after Wren was killed, a secret meeting was held at this Tennessee prison where Jimmy claimed to reveal who was behind the murder. And that was his very own cousin and Wren's ex-wife, Shara.
She told me that she'd been having threats from Lorenzo. He had hired somebody to kill her. She wanted him dead before he killed her.
Jimmy said a meeting took place at Shara's house some 2 months before Wren's murder, and two other men were there.
Billy was over there, and another gentleman, but I don't know his name.
Billy.
Yeah, he was a gardener.
Shara's gardener, Billy Ray Turner. Remember how Lorenzen suspected Shara might be sleeping with her lawn man? Was this the same guy? Maybe. If so, this wasn't the only connection between Shara and Billy.
So who did Shara ask to kill Lorenzen?
She asked Billy.
Billy had a rap sheet, but in recent years seemed to have gone straight. When he wasn't busy running his landscaping business, he was fulfilling his duties at the very same church where Shara preached.
He was the deacon of this church and she was a pastor. How deeply they knew each other, and there's a lot of speculation. I mean, it appears that they were intimate.
Billy and Shara, according to Jimmy, met with him again inside her house and this time got down to specifics.
She had me cut out to be the shooter. At that time, I was like, nah, I can't do nothing like that.
At what point in here were you offered anything to do it?
She said she could help me with my court case. If this happened, I get insurance money, I got the NBA money coming, and I would take care of y'all. She said, whoever does a shooting gets $50,000.
Soon after making her offer, Jimmy said Shara and Billy came to his house in Batesville, Mississippi, a sleepy little town south of Memphis. And this time she revealed how and where she wanted them to do the job.
She said, well, I want you and Billy to go out there and take care of
him. Where did she want you to take care of him at?
I guess go to his house.
In Atlanta?
So we went.
With directions from Shara, he said they headed to Atlanta and straight for Wren's condo complex, where they crawled through an open window. But Wren wasn't there.
Yeah, somebody on the couch with a bald head.
Police later figured out the bald-headed man asleep on the couch was Wren's roommate, Mike Gibson.
Had Lorenzo had been there, I'd have been gone too right now, you know?
According to Jimmy, he and Billy spotted security guards, crept out of the condo, and hightailed it back home. Soon after, said Jimmy, they met with Shara again. And this time, she revealed a whole new plan for Wren's murder on her home turf.
She was like, I'm going to get him to come here. It'd be easier that way.
And sure enough, at Shara's request, Wren did come back to Memphis for the very last time.
Coming up, a trap for Lorenzen.
Shara lured him back to Memphis with sexually explicit text messages.
And haunting details of that deadly night in the woods.
You're like, man, I'm still shaking.
When Dateline continues.
They drove all over town that July day in 2010, surveying the city and the suburbs, looking for the perfect place to kill Lorenzen Wright. This, according to Jimmy Martin, who claimed he was in a car with Shara Wright and her fellow minister, Billy Turner.
We went and checked out spots around. Memphis. They was picking the spots. I was just telling them whether it was a good spot or not.
Getting a consulting fee.
Yeah. Nah, that's not a good spot. Do it somewhere else.
Soon after that scouting trip, Shara sent Ren the first in a flurry of text messages. X-rated messages about hooking up in Memphis. And these are the mild messages, which only grew more erotic and explicit. Police had found the texts on Shara's cell phone when Ren went missing. Back then, they weren't sure if those messages might be connected to his case. But now, 7 years after the murder, the texts seemed to tell a story.
Shara lured him back to Memphis with, sexually explicit text messages.
Sure enough, Ren took the bait and later texted Shara from the Atlanta airport. Three little but life-changing words. And with that, Ren was on his way to Memphis. But according to close friend Mike Gibson, he may have been seeking more than just a one-night stand. Recently, Ren had confided he was ready to settle down after running in the fast lane after his divorce.
He's like, you know what? All this stuff I'm doing with these girls, I'm just tired of it. I might as well just get back with my wife, Cheryl, and be through with it. Me and her live a happy life. That's what he wanted.
But Shara didn't want to remarry Lorenzen. She wanted him murdered, according to her cousin, Jimmy Martin. Jimmy said that 2 days after he, Shara, and Billy conducted that murder site survey, she came to his house in Batesville, Mississippi. While there, Jimmy said Shara asked his mom for an odd favor.
She asked my mom for a metal detector.
Does your mama have a metal detector?
So with the metal detector in tow, the two returned to Memphis, picked up Billy, and drove to her house. Where, said Jimmy, Shara made a stunning announcement.
We did it. It happened. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, Lorenzo D.
And who actually fired the fatal shots? Jimmy said it was Billy Ray Turner, Shara's one-time gardener and possible lover, now alleged gunman, who at the meeting appeared to have a bad case of shooter's remorse.
He was like, man, I'm still shaking, my stomach hurting, I can't sleep, I can't do anything.
But what happened during the last moments of Lorenzen's life, before he was executed in that dark field? That night, according to Jimmy, Shara told Ren she needed to meet a man to pick up some money. Ren agreed to join her. They drove to a wooded area at the edge of town. Shara got out and walked over to Billy, who was secretly waiting nearby.
She said the Ren's walked up and Billy started shooting.
And then what happened?
He ran. They said they chased him down the woods.
Chased him down by following the glow of Ren's cell phone, said Jimmy, and continued firing. That's when Ren called 911 and screamed the last words of his life. And all those shots were fired by Billy from two different guns, said Jimmy.
And he shot at him.
Did Shara ever tell you that she also chased Lorenzen with Billy?
She said she ran up the road when the first shot fired.
And Jimmy, he insisted he was miles away at home in Mississippi that night.
Jimmy Martin never puts himself at the crime scene, which seems kind of odd. So is he lying, to kind of distance himself, to make himself look better?
But Jimmy did admit to helping Shara and Billy clean up the crime scene 2 days later. Using his mom's metal detector, Jimmy said the three of them looked for leftover evidence, including one of the two murder weapons which went missing during the shooting. But they never found it, said Jimmy. So he and Billy took the other handgun to this little lake in Mississippi.
We was out there at the lake, little pond. He cleaned them off, and he threw them in the water.
How many?
It was just one gun.
What kind?
The 9mm.
And that, insisted Jimmy Martin, was the God's truth of how Memphis icon Lorenzen Wright was murdered and the crime covered up. All orchestrated by Shara. It was quite a story, but was there any evidence to back it up? Well, maybe the answer was sitting on the bottom of that lake.
Coming up,
they sent a dive team down. I think it was an FBI dive team.
A deep dive yields a buried treasure. Was this the gun that killed Lorenzen?
Oh my God, we're onto something.
And another set of secret tapes.
I wanted to show you something.
With Shara doing the talking.
Walnut, Mississippi, some 75 miles southeast of Memphis. Population, 800. Outside of town is a little lake. A big pond, really. The very same pond that Jimmy Martin claimed held the key evidence in Lorenzen Wright's murder.
And how big is that pond?
About the size of a high school football field.
So in May of 2012, detectives headed there on a fishing expedition for a gun. Jimmy Martin insisted that Billy Turner had dumped it there 2 days after shooting Wren. Now, 2 years later, was it still there?
It's a murky lake. They couldn't find it. And so the whole thing kind of goes into limbo again.
As damning and detailed as Jimmy Martin's story seemed, detectives didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. But still, the investigation plodded on for years.
Was it still being investigated actively or just kind of when new leads would come in?
There were periods of time on this case that if we felt that one investigator had taken the case as far as he could take it, we'd give it to another investigator to get another perspective or to put a fresh set of eyes on it.
By 2016, some of those detectives who'd been digging through the case file and Jimmy Martin's police interview urged the command at the Memphis PD to take a second look at the case. They dubbed it Operation Rebound, very hush-hush. And one of the things they did was go back to that murky lake in Mississippi.
They got in some more information that made them more certain about this, and they sent a dive team down. I think it was an FBI dive team.
And guess what? 5 years after Jimmy Martin came forward,
they find the gun.
A 9mm handgun sitting in the muddy sediment. But was it really the weapon that killed Lorenzen Wright? The gun was sent to the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation for ballistics tests to see if it matched the casings collected at the crime scene. Then, a few weeks later,
they ballistics link it to the murder, one of two guns that was used at the scene.
Operation Rebound was rolling, but investigators kept a tight lid on all their new evidence for months.
Lorenzen Wright, former
basketball star. So Deborah Marion was still in the dark when she commemorated Lorenzen's 42nd birthday.
November 4th, a day that should be spent celebrating, is a painful reminder for Debbie Marion.
Once again, she held a somber vigil to keep her son's name in the news and the heat on the police.
It's heavy on my heart all the time, especially birthdays, Christmas, and then July, that day. Always on my mind.
Deborah, of course, knew nothing about the gun, or Jimmy Martin, or Billy Turner, as it was all top secret.
I really need your help, people. Come on, tell us something.
Then, a few days later, police did tell Deborah something. Something amazing.
The FBI helped search a remote lake in Walnut, Mississippi, and found an alleged murder weapon. Then things.
Some 7 long years after the murder, Deborah Marion suddenly felt a step closer to getting justice for her son.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, I found something, because we hadn't heard anything.
And Wren's close friends were now hopeful for the first time in years.
Oh my God, we're on to something.
Are you thinking that this is just the beginning?
It's just
the beginning. It's gonna fall like dominoes?
We got it, we got them. FBI dive team found it, and so I said, okay, well, if they're involved, then I know that they're on to somebody.
There were so many questions. How'd they find this gun all of a sudden? Why now? Who told them? Whose gun is it? What does it have to do with Shara Wright?
When Shara's ex-boyfriend, Calvin Cowan, saw the news, he called Shara in California.
And she was sounding very somber about it. And she was like, yeah, I saw it. Yeah. I don't believe they found a gun. She said, I think they're just making it up. What does it matter? You know, he's not coming back anyway.
Shara seemed low-key on the phone with Calvin, but detectives were betting she wouldn't stay that way for long. In fact,
Just days after the news broke about the gun being found, Shara suddenly flew to Memphis and met with Billy. Detectives were on their tail and snapped these surveillance shots. That's Shara in the black sweatsuit. Police had never revealed publicly that they knew the gun belonged to Billy. Instead, they waited and let Shara and Billy stew to see how they'd react.
The police were playing everybody. It was brilliant strategy that they wanted to get that information out to get more incriminating evidence from Shara and Billy Ray Turner. They threw them into a panic and got them talking about it.
Talking, which police started taping by tapping Shara and Billy's phones.
Hello?
Hey, what's up, Stein?
No, what did I do?
At first, the conversation didn't seem to make sense.
When y'all get married?
I don't know. When you get that ring, then getting that ring.
Police eventually came to believe that all the small talk was actually related to the case.
I wanted to show you something.
Okay. I hope you got that ring then.
By late 2017, Memphis police had heard enough and made their move.
December 5th, Billy Turner was arrested inside a convenience store in Collierville, and then Friday night.
And then we find out that he was her lawn man when Lorenzen was living with Cheryl. So this is a person who knew both of them. And then we find out that he's a deacon at a church in Collierville.
The very same church where Cheryl had been a minister when she lived in Memphis.
He was under everybody's noses the whole time.
Yeah. How's that for a kicker?
That is a kicker. That's an evil kicker.
It is. If this plans out being that she was the one who put everything in motion and then to be the one to actually take his life. Yeah. Yeah. Just the ultimate evil.
After years of nothing, it hits us all at one time. And we started thinking, did she? Did she actually?
Calvin Cowens also had plenty of questions about his former lover, so he and Shara spoke again. This time, police were listening too, on a wiretap.
How do we know Billy?
Billy got nothing to do with nobody or nothing.
She was like, that's my church mate. He's a church deacon. That's my friend. He didn't have anything to do with this.
Well, I don't know to tell the whole world. Because I'm not going to get in it. I'm going to let God step in.
But it wasn't God who stepped in. It was the district attorney.
The Shelby County Grand Jury indicted Billy R. Turner for the premeditated first-degree murder of Lorenzen Wright.
But out in California, Shara remained free. No arrest warrant. No indictment.
Are you wondering now, where does Shara fit in?
I'm thinking that Shara's living in a house of cards and it's about to crumble on her. It's just a matter of time before they get Shara.
Coming up. A dramatic moment on a dark highway. 7 years of waiting. And then...
You see Shara and she says something to you.
Yes. She turns around, look me dead in my face and say, I didn't do it.
When Dateline continues.
December 2017, Christmas time. But in California, Shara Wright wasn't celebrating. Her fellow minister, friend, and former lawn man, Billy Ray Turner, was now sitting in a Memphis jail, under arrest, accused of murdering Lorenzen Wright.
Although there's been an arrest in the Lorenzen Wright murder case, many are left with more questions than answers.
Shara stayed close to home and was often on the phone, calling friends and family to seek guidance or just vent, especially about Billy's arrest.
This is a lie from the pits of hell. They've been trying to pull Billy into it so that they can pull me into it.
They, of course, were the police, who were secretly listening in as Shara kept denying any role in Wren's murder.
Don't nobody believe that we were still in love or that we care for each other. Don't nobody believe that.
Over and over, Shara insisted she was innocent. The investigation was a sham.
It's just unbelievable. It's like a bad dream.
Then, just 10 days before Christmas, Shara was on the freeway and got a call from her oldest son.
Hey, baby. Mommy. Huh? What you doing?
Suddenly, Shara noticed something flashing in her rearview mirror.
Put the phone on the... I gotta call you back.
After months of tapping her phone, along with all the other evidence, police had the goods to finally arrest Shara. She was rushed to the Riverside County Jail, and the next day, Memphis police told the world.
Shara Wright Robinson was taken into custody last night in Riverside, California, by the members of the U.S. Marshal Service.
No, everybody was talking about it. It was all over the place. It was huge news in Memphis.
So huge that the next day, Deborah Marion organized a celebration in the cemetery.
Lorenzo loved fireworks, so I had to have fireworks at the cemetery.
Never heard of anything like that before.
Lorenzo had to hear that pow, pow, pow. We had to celebrate, a big celebration. We had a ball. Sure did.
After 7 long years of trying to get Shara arrested, Deborah had just one question for her.
And what I would like to say to Shara, why? Why?
Lorenzen's friends, who knew that Shara had long been under suspicion, still had trouble accepting the news of her arrest.
I'm like, what do you mean? She got arrested for killing Lorenzen. And I got really angry.
Well, I could just imagine all the emotions you're feeling. Betrayal. And also second-guessing yourself.
Second-guessing myself, yes.
And you knew her better than most.
Yeah, but sometimes what people do in the dark will come to light.
Come to light and soon come to court, as Shara now faced several charges.
Attempted murder, conspiracy to murder, and first-degree murder.
Soon after her arrest, looking stressed and exhausted,
I'll call the Shara Wright matter.
Shara appeared in a California courtroom for extradition back to Memphis, where she would face all those charges.
She looked pathetic. She looked very tired and defeated. She looked like a broken person.
At this time, do you waive extradition to the state of Tennessee?
I do.
But Shara would not be returning to her Memphis mansion. This time, a jail cell awaited her after bail was set.
The bond in this case shall be set to cover this indictment at $20 million for the reasons.
Sitting in the front row was Deborah.
So you see Shara in court, and she says something to you.
Yes. She turns around and looks me dead in my face, just like I'm looking at you, and say, I did do it. I said, you witch.
You called her a witch in court?
Without the W. You can't kill my son and keep teasing me. I didn't do it. No.
But Deborah's rage wasn't just directed at Shara. There, of course, was another defendant in the case, Billy Ray Turner.
Good morning, sir.
Billy faced murder charges too, and his bail was set at $15 million. When he appeared in court, Deborah greeted him as well.
How could you have murdered my son? That's what I need to know, just how.
Billy and Shara were scheduled to be tried together, but they were represented by different defense attorneys. Shara would be defended by Lori Hall and Junie Ganguly.
It was probably one of the top three cases in the last 50 years of Memphis.
This case involved thousands and thousands of pages and recordings.
The recordings, especially the ones with Shara's cousin turned informant, Jimmy Martin. But her attorneys were already telling reporters that Jimmy, not Shara, should be charged with the crime.
He's the one that provided, again, this alleged story, the location of the gun. And, okay, the gun found matches the bullets found in Mr. Wright's body.
But Shara's attorneys also believed they had another card to play, something they hoped might sway the jury, and just maybe set her free.
Coming up...
And Shara did not want to go back to that life.
A surprising strategy from the defense and a courtroom confrontation.
I just hate what happened to my child.
What would Shara's fate be?
So
Clerk on order, remain seated.
This wasn't quite what Shira Wright envisioned when she returned to Memphis in 2018. Wearing an orange jumpsuit and reuniting with fellow minister Billy Ray Turner, not in a church, but a courtroom.
Attorneys for both co-defendants charged with first-degree murder and the death of Lorenzen Wright filed motions Thursday in preparation.
Both Shira and Billy pleaded not guilty. Their trial was slated to start in September 2019.
How do you feel with as the trial draws near? Are you confident?
Yes, I am. I feel elated, and it's going to turn out just like it's supposed to. All the aces are going to be in their places. That means everybody's going to be where they need to be.
Including all that evidence, like the explosive police interviews with Jimmy Martin, the gun found in the lake, and all those phone calls police recorded of Shira and Billy Turner.
Hey, what's up, guy?
No, what did I do?
Evidence that seemed overwhelming.
And it points toward Shira Wright. She orchestrated this for the insurance money and multiple motives, you know, bitterness towards him. She was jealous. And that she conscripted Billy Ray Turner and Jimmy Martin to help her do it.
If convicted, both Shira and Billy were facing major prison time. The prosecution decided not to pursue the death penalty, but a life sentence was a distinct possibility, which was just fine with Deborah Marion.
She murdered him and assassinated his character. She killed him twice. I want her to suffer every day. Every day she wake up, I want her to miss her kids like I miss mine.
An 8x10 cell is a far cry from
Thank
a mansion.
You. Sure will.
There are no diamonds and Bentleys in prison.
None.
Keeping Shira out of prison was a tall order for defense attorneys Lori Hall and Junie Ganguly, especially if her fellow minister and alleged partner in crime, Billy Turner, flipped and testified against her.
We began to fortify the defense that Shira did it. Shira recruited Billy. But she did it to get away from this abusive relationship.
That was the defense's version. Shira was an abused woman, desperately looking for a way out.
Absolutely, two sides to Lorenzen Wright. There's the public persona, very positive, community-oriented. Privately, he had a very tumultuous marriage, many affairs, and get angry and beat Shira Wright.
In fact, Shira mentioned the abuse during a call to her son, which police secretly recorded.
You've been there a lot of times when your dad and them beat the living hell out of me.
We were able to corroborate Shira's allegations of abuse, both with the older children and with several friends of Shira's and family members.
Deborah Marion and Lorenzen's friends were outraged by the allegations, insisting he never abused Shira. Wren was never charged with any violence against his wife, and Shira never filed any reports with police alleging she had been abused.
It's fairly common that victims of domestic violence don't report their abusers to the police.
But why, after being divorced and living 400 miles apart, would Shira suddenly want Wren dead?
He was telling the children in the summer of 2010 words to the effect of, "Your mother and I are going to get back together." And Shira did not want to go back to that life.
According to her attorneys, Shira never wanted to face Wren's abuse again. So when he insisted on reuniting, she helped arrange his murder. But Shira's attorneys knew their defense was risky.
We understood that Lorenzen lived in a different city. We understood that the abuse had occurred several years earlier. So none of that was lost on us.
If they lost, Shira faced life in prison. So her lawyers negotiated a deal with the DA. Shira pleaded guilty to facilitation to commit first-degree murder and also attempted murder for the first failed attempt on Lorenzen's life.
Craig, good morning.
Good morning.
In July of 2019, almost 9 years to the day since Wren's death, the courtroom was packed for Shira's sentencing hearing. Sitting just a few feet away from her was Deborah Marion, still angry and also anxious to see what the judge would impose.
30 years confinement in the Tennessee Department of Corrections as a...
30 years. It certainly sounded like a long time. But the defense knew that because Shira didn't have a criminal history, her sentence would be much shorter.
the maximum amount of time that she's going to serve would be 16 years or so.
16 years, barely over half the sentence. But get this, Tennessee law required her to only do 30% of her original 30-year sentence before being eligible for parole. So, with jail time served, she could get out before the year 2030.
That's not fair. That is not fair. What they do, I don't understand. You just go do a few little years. That's not fair. You know, I want her to do a plea deal when Lorenzen come back. Then she can get out.
At the sentencing hearing, Deborah finally got a chance to speak directly to Shara.
I just hate what happened to my child. But he left nice-looking kids here for his grandma. They want to see me. And I'm ready for them to come back to home with their family.
Deborah's six grandchildren were not in court that day to see their mother let off to prison. We reached out to the older children, but they declined our request for an interview. We also tried contacting Shara in prison, but never got a response.
She's eligible for parole pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly. Did Shara get what she deserved? I don't think that she did. If she's the ringleader's responsible for this, at some point Shara's going to get out of prison, and she's going to get a chance to go on with her life. The rest is never going to have that opportunity.
Jimmy Martin has not been charged in the case. As for Billy Turner, his attorney told us Billy was not involved in any aspect of the crime and that Jimmy Martin's police interview is not credible. Billy's trial was delayed because of COVID-19 and has not been rescheduled. It's not yet known if Shara will testify. But when it happens, Deborah Marion will be there, seeking final justice for her son. And also hoping to restore his reputation as a hometown hero.
This boy was just loving. He just loved by sight. He just saw personality. If you was good to him, he was great to you. That's for sure.
That's all for this edition of Dateline. We'll see you again Thursday at 10, 9 Central. And of course, I'll see you each weeknight for NBC Nightly News. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, good night.